So, welcome back. We are now starting the second parak of Melachim Beis. We're going to focus on, this is the second part of the series of the ascent of Eliyahu, and this is really the focus on Eliyahu's actual ascent to heaven. This is a story that no doubt we've all heard about, we've all thought about, but it pays to actually appreciate what's really going on over here. This is an incredibly deep and powerful experience. Let's take a little bit of time to appreciate it. So, without much further ado, let's jump straight in. We're going to be learning together this essentially, I would say, three quarters of this of Perek Beis. It's a very, very fascinating Perek. We're told the following, and there's a lot to think about as we do this together. So let's look of course at the Pesukim. The Pesukim give us the context, and then we're able to spend a little time appreciating what's really going on. So here we go. We're told Vayhi Baha Alois Hashem es Eliyahu Baha Sa'ara Hashemayim Vayelech Eliyahu VeElisha Mina Gilgal. So when Eliyahu went in a storm up to heaven, and Eliyahu and Elisha went to Gilgal. So this is a very unusual story in Tanakh, in that we're told the punchline at the very beginning, right? So it's not like there's going to be a tension that's going to be released when this happens. We're told at the very beginning what's about to happen. He's going to go up to heaven. They start off their trip to Gilgal. Vayomer Eliyahu el Elisha, shav shev na poi. Please stay here. Ki Hashem shalachani ad Beis El. Hashem sent me to Beis El. Vayomer Elisha, chai Hashem v'chei nafshecha i'im ezavcha. Vayeredu Beis El. So he refuses to leave his master, and they go down to Beis El. Vayetsu b'nei anevim asher Beis El. El Elisha vayomru elav. Hayodata ki ayom Hashem lokech es adonecha me'al roshecha vayomer gam ani yodati echeshu. So they said to him, do you know that your master is going to be taken from above you? And he says, I know, keep quiet. So vayomer loy. So then we get the next step of the story. Vayomer Eliyahu Elisha shev na po. Ki Hashem shalachani yiricho vayomer chay Hashem v'chein av shechoy im ez veka. He tries to make him stay there, and he refuses to stay when he's in the area of Beit El. So they come to Jericho. So they say to him, Elisha, do you know Hashem's going to take away your master? I know, keep quiet. Vayomer Eliyahu, shev na po. Eliyahu, the same story repeats. Eliyahu says to Elisha, stay here. Ki Hashem shalachani hayardena. Hashem sent me to the Jordan River. Vayomer chay Hashem v'chei nafshechoyim zveka. And he says, I'm not going to leave you behind. Vayel chushneim. And the two of them went. V'chamishim ish mibnei anevim holchu ve'andu mineged merochoy kushneihem omdu al hayarden. There's a party of 50 who are watching him, and Elisha and Eliyahu go to the Jordan River. So this is just a very, very fascinating story that's occurring over here, a very fascinating perspective that is coming out here now. So let's just try to appreciate this for a second. So once again, I want to just see if this is one thing which is not working 100% here. I want to see if this is working like this. Yeah. Let's try this again. Here we are. I don't see my video here. I just want to make sure I don't see that I'm in the picture. Can anybody see me, or can you just hear me?
No, see you.
Okay, fine. Okay, I can't see everybody. Okay, fine. So, well, as long as at least there's one way, then that's fine. So here we go. Let's learn and appreciate this for a moment. Seems like a very strange story. There should be parallels already, like jumping out at us. Parallels of Avram and Yitzhak going up on the Akedah, going together. You know, there should be parallels to Rus and Naomi, Rus wanting to cleave to her mother-in-law. Parallels to Yoshua and Moshe Rabbeinu. And the other Nevi'im. There's a lot of fascinating parallels in Tanakh which we could explore. But let's just try to get down to basics right now. First of all, is they're on this trip. Does Eliyahu know the truth behind the first words of the Perek? What are the first words in the beginning of the Perek? When Hashem was going to take Eliyahu in a Sa'ara HaShemayim, in a storm up to heaven. Does Eliyahu know about this? And then the question is what does anybody else know about this? So it seems like everybody else knows about it because the Bnei Nevi'im talk about it, and Elisha seems to know about it, and he's telling them to keep quiet. But what about Eliyahu? So here we go. Let's start at the beginning. The Radak points out a very beautiful point, and he says like this: Vayelech Eliyahu, ve'Eliyahu ne'emar lo beruach hanavua ki ba'oisa hayom yilakach. He knew that this is the day that he's going to be taken. V'loy gilah ha-davar li-Elisha. He did not tell it to Elisha. Av Elisha ne'emar loy gam kein beruach ha-nevuah, but he independently received it as a prophecy. Sharei omar loy gam ani odati echeshu v'shar ha-nevim ne'emar lohem kol shekein hu. So what that means to say is that we'll call it independent prophecies to each of the three groups. Eliyahu knows, Elisha knows, and the Bnei Nevi'im know also as well, but they all know independently of each other. There's no communication, which is what makes this very difficult. So you can imagine that this is a trip which is laden with pressure. There's a lot of stress here. Eliyahu's going out, he knows he's going to be taken out. He doesn't want Elisha to be with him for whatever reason. Elisha wants to be with him. He hasn't communicated to Elisha that he's really going up, but Elisha really knows that he's going up, and the other Nevi'im also, and they're kind of hanging on, and they want to be close. Everybody is, there's a lot of, we'll call it, does everybody know that everybody else knows is what's going on over here. So just really, really a fascinating thing. Now, how did they know this? So like, how did the other Nevi'im know this? So interesting enough, the Radak said they got a Nevuah. However, the Abar Barnel takes a different approach. We're not going to read the whole Abar Barnel, but he makes a very beautiful suggestion. And he says, maybe we'll just read the parable, the image that he uses to describe this. He says, let's say you have a number of tributaries, and those tributaries all come from one spring, one source. Kasher yechzur ha-mayim v'lo yavo, yodaya shamakor mushchas. If you know that the water is no longer coming, the tributaries are drying up, they're dirty, you know that where is this coming from? It's stemming from the makor, from the source, from that spring. The sheyesh boy pega ma, and there must be something wrong with the spring. So says the Abar Barnel, what really happened in the eyes of these Nevi'im is that they noticed that their own prophecy was drying up. It was tainted. It wasn't full. Therefore, they said, you know what? It must be that there's something wrong with the prophecy itself, with Eliyahu. Something is happening to Eliyahu, and we don't know what it is, but there's something afoot. And Elisha was experiencing the same thing. So that side conversation that Elisha and the Bnei Nevi'im are having together is not because they were told it, but because they could sense it in their own temperature of their own Nevuah. That's what's really happening over here. And they're trying to surmise what is going on with Eliyahu. They can sense that something's about to happen. They can sense that Eliyahu is about to disappear as well. Okay? So it's interesting. Now, the question we have to ask ourselves is, why would it be that Eliyahu would not want Elisha to be with him? He keeps trying to convince him to desist. Why would that be the case? So here's what the Malbim suggests, a very beautiful suggestion. He says, Shev po ki Hashem shlochani ad beis el. He says, stay here. Okay, so he says the following. Vayetsu b'nei ha-nevi'im asher beis el. Let's skip this point. Vayikshu b'nei ha-nevi'im v'layetsu v'alisha shehirgish b'yirah. V'alisha shehirgish ma b'da'atoi l'rotzo la'azvoi. So Elisha knows something is afoot. He doesn't want to abandon him. He wants to achieve being with Eliyahu and the gifts that he would get from Eliyahu. And he would not be able to get this if he left Eliyahu alone now. I just want to see if this is the correct place then I'm correct. No, I'm actually quoting the later part. The part I wanted to focus on over here is, here we are. I apologize, it's a little further up in source 3. The Eliyahu rotzo shiyishaer loy Elisha levad mekabel ha'or v'ruach shel Eliyahu rak kol b'nei ha-nevi'im. Eliyahu wanted it to be that in a democratic way all the Nevi'im would receive the same prophecy. U'komoy sh'amar rabbi mi yitain kol am Hashem Nevi'im. Like Moshe Rabbeinu said, let all the prophets of Israel be, all the people of Israel be Nevi'im, like he says in Parashas Ba'aloscha, when Eldad and Medad were mistabe b'machaneh. While Moshe was still around, he couldn't really transfer this prophetic spirit to everybody else. When Moshe Rabbeinu spread his Nevuah to these other 70 prophets, they became the channel through which other people could access the divine as well. As it says in Seder, he quotes the Seder Mishnah, Moshe shana la'aron v'achachach aron l'zakenim v'achachach aron l'zakenim l'Yisrael, u'kishin Yisraem Yoshua al she'elda l'meidah mekablim shefa b'fnei atzmam, when Yoshua is upset that Eldad and Medad were now suddenly receiving Navu in the camp. Rotzo Shemoshe Yichle es Hashefa Mayhem, as he says, lock them up. Rotzo Lomar Menoem Kabbalas Hashefa Omar Miyiten Shekol Ha'am Hashem Yiyu Neviim. He doesn't want it to be that it's going to be only the prophets of Hashem. The Kavanazu Rotzo Liyal Oleches Levadoy Lebeis El Liyricho Sheshnei Mekomos Elu Hoyun Nimtzoim Bnei Neviim. Why did he go there? Because there are many prophets here. So in Eliyahu's, so to speak, swan song, he wanted to spread the wealth further than just being with Elisha. That's part of what's going on over here. It's the attempt to be able to spread his wealth. Folks, it's just a little bit of background, so I'm going to put the mute on, but please feel free to jump in at any point. Okay, so this is what the Malbim says over here. So we see this sort of struggle, also Eliyahu realizing what the future holds, what he's trying to achieve over here. Now, you'll notice, if we just take a look at the map quickly, actually, I'm just going to scan down for a moment to the map. You'll notice a few places that he's going. So he goes to Beis El, he goes to Jericho, and he goes to the Yarden. He also goes to Gilgal. Does anybody know where Gilgal actually is situated? If anybody remembers where Gilgal is. It is really the encampment of Bnei Yisrael when they first came into the land of Israel. It's actually not marked on this map. But as they crossed the Jordan Valley, adjacent to Jericho, there was an area on the coast of, or the banks of the river on the west side, which was called Gilgal. That's where they set up camp. That's where they put the 12 rocks and so on. So one would have to ask oneself, so why are these three places the places that he went? The Rabbi Bernal suggests that all of these places have some degree of divine intervention that occurred at them. Right, so he goes on to say that Rishona Gilgal Likdushosoy Kamoisha Avoer V'Acharo Beis El Ashebo Nigla Hashem LeYakov Pamaim Hashem appeared to Yaakov in Beis El two times V'Acharo Yericha Shel Nilkach Beneis Jericho was conquered by a miracle V'Chein Yilkach Eliel Beneis V'Achar Yarden Shesham Naase Neis V'Avoras Aron Elokim, and the Yarden itself was a place where Israel traversed the Yarden miraculously. So all of these places are being described over here are places where miracles have occurred. Why is he going to places of miracles? Because in Eliyahu's mind, he doesn't know the final destination. It's much like the Arkada, where Avram does not know where the Arkada is going to take place, but he knows something miraculous will happen, or he knows that he's put up to a very difficult test. So Eliyahu is trying to find a place that he thinks would be appropriate for this to happen. So he's going to the places which are well known for miracles. So Beis El, Yericho, Gilgal, and Yarden, three places that he's really going. I would argue as well that it is interesting to me that also a lot of them have to do with stones and the unity of Klal Yisrael. So Beis El was the place where Yaakov Avinu puts the 12 rocks around his head. They turn into one, and then he comes up and he makes them his back. There again on the way back, we know that in the crossing the Jordan, they took 12 stones out of the Jordan. They put them in Gilgal. They each one each for the Shiftei Yisrael. He puts 12 stones from the bank of the river back in the river. So and the walls of Yericho falling. There's a lot with all of Klal Yisrael surrounding it. There's a lot to be said in terms of the unity of Klal Yisrael, which perhaps was one of the dreams of Eliyahu Hanavi, of bringing all of Israel back together, which is why he went perhaps to these 3/4 places, just for food for thought. Now, what happens is after this debacle occurs, we now hear that Eliyahu is going to go east Bank Jordan. He's traversing eastwards. He's leaving Israel proper. So here we go. Pasuk Ches to Yud. He takes off his mantle, his robe, and he wraps it up. He hits the river. Now, folks, you know, all Hasidic stories stem from this experience, yeah? Right? So he hits the river with his kapota, and the river splits this way and that way, thither and hither. And they now cross in the middle, in the dry. Ask me what you want from me before I am taken from you. Let the portion of your spirit be doubled upon me. You've asked me a very difficult thing. If you're able to witness me being taken, then you will have such. If you're not able to witness me, you will not be ascending, you will not be able to gain access to this. Okay, fascinating perspective here. So one question one has to ask is that after Eliyahu, let's say Eliyahu is attempting to be taken, right? He knows he's been taken. And he's going to all these different places where he believes that there's more of a spiritual atmosphere. Miracles are performed, unity of Klal. These are all kinds of explanations that we can give as to why he goes to these places. But let's say it's not working, right? So he goes to Gilgal, he goes to Beis El, he goes to Yericho, he goes to all these places, right? And then it isn't working out. Why would he go across the Jordan? Why would he go to the east bank of the Jordan? I mean, he's leaving Israel proper, right? So he's going to the land of God of Asher and Gad and Reuben and Chatzishev and Menashe. Why would he do that? So the Radak says, well, he's actually patterning. It's almost like the reversal of crossing the Yarden going in. But Israel crossed the Yarden split and went in. By the way, just to clarify something about rivers splitting, rivers don't split, they just stop. Seas have to split. Rivers just stop and then the other side just flows away, right? So it's the opposite of how they came in. The river went into one long pillar, and they crossed. Similarly over here, why is he doing this? So what is interesting is the Radak says, Umash in source 5, is actually at the beginning of the parak where he says this, Umash yoholchin me'ever hayarden nireh, ki kein ne'emro loy le'eliyahu benevuah, he must have known this in his own prophecy, ki me'ever le'yarden yilokech, that he is going to be taken there. So he knows that this is where the land where he's going to be taken from. Ulai, maybe he's going to the place where Moshe Rabbeinu himself was taken. The end of Sefer Devarim, when Moshe Rabbeinu is taken up by to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it was on Transjordan. Eliyahu came very close to Moshe Rabbeinu. We know that the many actions that Eliyahu has taken, which are parallel Moshe Rabbeinu himself. He goes to Har Sinai. He stays in Har Sinai after fasting 40 days and 40 nights. This is all Eliyahu doing this. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes to him and displays himself in the Nikra Satsuri, in the cave. That's all a repetition of what happened to Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? So his exiting this world is going to be similar to Moshe Rabbeinu, and that's perhaps why he's going to the area that Moshe Rabbeinu actually left as well. Why do we not know where Moshe Rabbeinu is buried? And one of the reasons that's given is that it should not become a shrine. We shouldn't make up a new religion surrounding Moshe. People have made up religions over much more trivial matters. And so Eliyahu, in a certain sense as well, Eliyahu was so powerful also that it was also equally his ascent was hidden as well. Now, just an interesting perspective is over here is how is this working? Like, how are the exact mechanics of this miracle going on? So the Malbim says a very beautiful thing. He says the following. He says, "Vayikach al derech haremes, hinei kfar be'aru hachachamim ki Eliyahu nizdakech gufoy v'nifredu mimenu shnei yesoros hakveidim mayim v'afar." Eliyahu had so purified himself that already he'd shed the lower trappings of the human existence. So what that means is that the Malbim is referring to a fascinating idea that everything in this world is compromised of the four elements. And these were later on known as humors. And they are made up of fire, water, earth, and wind. And so the lower, the heavier of those two elements, which are water and dust, are being shed from Eliyahu. In a certain sense, in his character, his persona, he's able to leave those behind. He drops them. V'nishar guf murkav me'esh v'ruach. Therefore, Eliyahu's spirit was only left with the higher, two loftier physical elements. Sheyachol la'alois l'malo. Therefore, he was able to, so to speak, float. Therefore, he was able to be a little higher than the material reality around him. And therefore, his body actually remained in the upper celestial spheres. By the time that he was being fed these particular substances in the Sinai desert when he was by Har Sinai, and that's when he shed the lower forms. So Ator Otzel Afrid Gam Yisora Mayim. So what's Eliyahu doing now when it comes to the river? It's not just that he needs to get across and he couldn't find the footbridge. What it means to say is that he's shedding the reliance upon that we'll call it that anchor to this world, which is water. So he's shedding that as he walks through the water, literally. So this is more of a metaphor for Eliyahu, in a certain sense, actually shedding every layer of material reality and bodily awareness as he moves towards heaven. if you frame it this way, according to the Malbim, Eliyahu is in a progressive state of ascent, or a progressive state of receding from the physical world and crossing the river, or leaving the water behind, essentially, is a progression in that direction as well. Very, very powerful perspective, which now understand why when he goes up to heaven, it's Beruach Sa'ara. Ruach is the last of the four elements, which essentially Eliyahu is penetrating. Just to understand this in more sophisticated terms, terminology as to what's going on over here. Now, a few other points as well is Elisha is given this blank check. So Elisha is given whatever it is that you want, and he says, "I would like pi shnayim, twice." What does that mean? What exactly is he asking for? The Mefarshim struggle with this. The one suggestion that the Malbim suggested is pi shnayim in sabar ruchacha ye alai ki Eliyahu haya baruchai pi shnayim yesar neviim. Eliyahu was already twice the capacity of regular prophets. He's not saying I want to be double you, Eliyahu. That's a rather haughty perspective to take to your teacher. Rather, you're saying I'd like to be like you are, which is double in capacity to the rest of the Nevi'im. Vegam hamekubalim came darkam ba'amram she'Eliyahu ze Pinchas shehushtelu loy boy nishmas nadavaviu. There are those who say al pi Kabbalah. The Malbim digs into this right here, that Pinchas is Eliyahu, and in fact, Pinchas had the two neshamas of Nadav v'Avihu, right? Umelitzim, umelitzosom, ki Pinchas niskahein tachas Nadav v'Avihu v'lochach es madregosom. Remember, Pinchas was originally excluded from being a Kohen. He was then later on inducted because of his actions. How did he have that? Because in his neshama, he was actually the departed soul of Nadav and Avihu. That's the suggestion over here. V'lokach es madregosom. U'mizeh nitan loy b'ris hashalom v'achayim u'vazeh oya pishnayim b'ruchachoy. That's why Eliyahu himself was a double spirit. Right? Meaning to say he started off with a double portion. U'bikesh shetavor madregozu elov. So what Elisha is asking for is, please pass that on to me. Ulam das chachomenu zichron livracha shebikesh pishnayim mamish. Yes, Eliyahu cannot give more than he has, right? It's not possible to, sort of dole out more than is actually inside him. What does it mean? Chashav ki b'eis ya'aleh ha-shamayma v'yafshit simlas ha-choy me'alav oz tiye madregas Eliyahu g'dola mo'od me'asher hu'ata v'myatzil alav oz es oro v'shifo yaspik ma shiyushpa mimenu ad shemadregas Elisha tiye g'dola k'fi shnayim mimadregas Eliyahu ata. So what he's saying is like this. Eliyahu, right now you're still trapped in the confines of this world, but you're much bigger than the confines of the body and the physical constraints that you're in. Once you go up and you shed everything of the material world, and you'll be your real full spiritual capacity, which is huge, double what you are now, please give me the blessing of that, not now. Meaning to say, give me the blessing of where we will be, not where we are right now, is what he's asking and begging from Eliyahu. In fact, Chazal go on to point out that we will see that in all of the miracles that Eliyahu was able to perform, Elisha performed them double. So as an example, Eliyahu resurrected the dead. We're going to see that Elisha will resurrect the dead twice. We'll see two episodes where Elisha does this. Every miracle that Eliyahu does is doubled by Elisha, coming back to this notion of Ruchacha Pishnayim. Now, these are two suggestions, okay? So let's go back again. The Malbim has said, Kabbalistically speaking, Eliyahu is already we'll call double neshama. He has double capacity of other than Nevi'im. Why? Because maybe his root was from Nadav and Avihu, which that's the souls that he took. Eliyahu is a continuation of Pinchas, of these two souls. He's saying, give me the capacity of that. That's one idea. The Malbim said the other idea is he wants the ability of Eliyahu's potential, which is right now limited, but Eliyahu, give me what you are when you're not limited, which is when you get to Shemaim, give me that, which is really double what you are now. That's the other way that the Malbim says it, because the Malbim is struggling with how could he ask for something which Eliyahu himself doesn't have. There is another way of looking at this, and you see that the problem with the Malbim is you follow this through. Let's go back to the pasuk over here. What did Eliyahu answer him? He says this is very difficult, right? Hikshiso lishol im tire oisi lukach meitach yihi lecha chein v'mayin lo yihiyeh. He says, if you're going to be able to see me ascend, then you'll get this. If you're not able to see me ascend, then you won't get this. How does that relate? How does that condition relate to the request that Elisha has just made? If it's all about the spiritual prowess, then what does this have to do with it? Says the Abba Benel, you know what? This actually is a completely different request than we expected. Listen to what he says, and we're not going to read the whole thing, just one of the first two lines are very instructive. Lochen nire ki Elisha loy shalom Eliyahu kiflay miruchoy. He didn't ask for twice his spirit. Loy benisim, not in miracles like Chazal suggests. Veloy benevua, veloy mimenu, and not his greatness. Veloy mishar neviim, and not all other neviim. So the Abarbanel is dismissing all the other suggestions. What was he really asking for? He was asking for the following. You know, Elisha made a huge sacrifice. Elisha was a young man. He came from a rich family. His family was well endowed. They had much livestock. And remember what happened? Is that when he found Eliyahu, and Eliyahu put his aderis over him, his cloak over him, Elisha wanted to join this individual, this spiritual oracle. He wanted to have more to do with him. And so he left behind his parents. He left behind his townsfolk. He left behind his future as being the prince to all of this wealth. And he went because he believed in Eliyahu. He believed the truths that Eliyahu was speaking about. And the two of them, in a certain sense, lived cloistered away from the world in a sublime, we'll call it conversation of the divine, talking about the most lofty of concepts. And that's the life that Elisha chose for himself. He did not want to go back to the farmlands, the homestead that he had, which was quite available to him. He could have led quite a happy life, sipping coffee, overlooking his terrace. But he did not. But what's happening is this terrible thing is happening right now, is that the person, the reason why he left his life behind is disappearing. So how do you deal with this? You know, I have the opportunity sometimes to talk to people who are becoming Jewish, people who from the outside who are becoming Jewish, and there are some just incredible human beings. Some of them are becoming Jewish with and while there's a relationship going on. There's somebody they that they're getting into a relationship with, and they intend to marry them many times. And one of the important questions one has to ask is are you choosing Judaism because of Judaism, or are you choosing Judaism because of another person? Because you see, other people can unfortunately come and go. And one's choices in life have to be about the idea itself. And Elisha's facing this crisis himself. He chose this path because of Eliyahu. Eliyahu was this incredible, incredible figure, a figure who could talk the ideas of God like no one else in the entire generation. And now Eliyahu's going. And what he's saying, Pi Shnayim, suggests the Abarbanel, is what he was really looking for. What he was really missing is he's going to miss the companionship of Eliyahu. The companionship of ideas, the metaphoric, metaphysical conversations they're going to have about godliness in this world, that is what he's missing. He says, I would love to have pi shnayim, the mouth twice. I don't know how I'll continue without the conversations, the dialogues we have, which is what brought me to this place. Who else is there in society who's going to talk about ideas and not just politics, not just about the local elections, not about the latest machlokes in time on the local newspapers? I want to talk ideas. And there's no one else I can speak to. What's Eliyahu's answer to him? He says, you know what? We'll still be able to commune, says Eliyahu, but only on one condition. And that is, if you can see my ascent, it means to say that you, to a certain degree, have shed some of your bodily awareness, that you might be open enough for my spirit to commune with you. So the promise was not about abilities and prophecy and strength. It was really about this pristine idea of this relationship in ideas that they had. And Eliyahu says, I can still give that to you. If you're able, if you yourself prove yourself worthy of that conversation. Very, very powerful idea. Let's now move into the last section over here where we hear about the ascent of Eliyahu. And as they're talking, they're crossing the Yarden, he's shedding his water, so to speak, the water, his bodily awareness in the dimension of water, as the Malbim explains. Here's what we hear here. Vayihem ha-holchim, holoich v'daber, they're speaking. V'inei rechav esh v'susay esh, v'yafridu bein ha-shneihem, v'ayal Eliyahu b'asor ha-shamayim. A chariot of fire led by horses of fire comes and runs between the two of them, separating the two from each other. V'elisha ro'eh v'umitzayek avi avi rechav Yisrael p'rashov. And he calls out and he says, my father, chariot of Israel and the horsemen. V'lei ro'ou oid v'yachazek b'gadov v'yikro'em l'shnayim k'ro'em. And he tore them, he rent them into two pieces. This is often a statement you'll hear when there's a terrible, terrible loss in Klal Yisrael. Avi, Avi, Rechev Yisrael. Rechev is important. Obviously, Eliyahu is brought up in a chariot, but he's not mourning the chariot. He's mourning a person who has become the vehicle of godliness in this world, a rechev. When you talk about the merkava of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who is zoicha, who has the merit to be the rechev of Hashem in this world. He's lost that chariot, that vehicle of godliness in this world, and he tears his clothes. He takes Eliyahu's mantle, and which had been dropped on the side of the Jordan River, where he is standing on the east bank. And he says, "Vayikach es aderes Eliyahu asher naflame alav vayakes amayim vayomer aye Hashem elokei Eliyahu afu vayakes amayim vayachatzu heina vaheina vayavor Elisha." He's, where's the God of Eliyahu? And he hits the water, and the water splits hither and thither on both sides again. Again, according to Chazal, this is an expression of the Pishnaim. Eliyahu's power has now been transmitted to his student Elisha. They realize the spirit of Eliyahu has rested upon Elisha, and they bowed down and they prostrated themselves to the ground. So, a lot of things to think about here, folks. So, number one is this is a rather dramatic exit, right? So, why does it have to be like this? So, we already saw some of the ideas of this. The Malbim was talking about shedding bodily awareness. The Ralbah goes on in this way and he says, you know, upwards is a funny convention that we use. We talk about, you know, we look up to Shomayim. Well, yes or no? You know what I'm saying? God isn't in, you know, interstellar space. It's not like he's living, you know, in the Oort cloud. That's not how it works, right? So up is a bit of a bad convention. And even if you think about upwards on a sphere, that's changing all the time, right? So up is a rather difficult word. But Tanakh has to use a word which has an orientation, which relates to spirituality. How do you relate to spirituality, which is not space-bound, with a word which indicates space, right? So up is a space-bound word. It's a vector, right? So therefore, essentially says the Ralbag, you can't understand his ascent to the heavens. Bodies don't ascend to the places that we're talking about, into the spiritual realm. Remember, by the way, the Ralbag was an astronomer par excellence. He was one of the world's leading astronomers in his days. He was taken to a place which is not yet understood. So he says that perhaps he has not left the spirit, the physical world. He's in some form of this physical world which we have not yet discovered, as the Ralbag says. Radak says no. Upwards means inwards, essentially, into leaving the constraints of the physical bounds and perimeters of this world into a spiritual world, in the world, the way that Tanakh explains that is up, right? But that doesn't mean up. It means inwards. It means to a dimension which cannot be measured by any type of meter, whether it be an altimeter or a barometer or a thermometer or an electric radioactive sensor. No, he is now leaving that realm. That's what's happening to Eliyahu, which is why it's a ruach sa'ara as well. The Kedushas Levi actually points this out. Rav Levi Yitzchak of Berditchov points out in Parashas Pinchas, no less, that when it talks about Pinchas Eliyahu, it says, how is it that Pinchas could have lasted so many years to be Eliyahu, if it means literally? He says, because ki aguf asher ba'odam hu rachoik me'avodas Hashem. The natural body, our bodily awareness, is not particularly interested in serving God all day. It's more interested in napping, getting pleasure, being fed and showered. Right? It's just, you know, and these days, you know, resting on a couch in some sort of terrible posture watching something, right? So that's what the body's interested in. Ki aguf hu choshev bitzarchus shalai. So that's what the body is interested in. Rak hanashama asher ba'odam hu hachosheves tamid b'yiras Hashem. The soul is yearning for something more, right? It's almost trying to break out of this material cage. Aval aguf, okay? Lakach hu alech likvor. That's why you bury the body. Aval be'emes, im hoya haguf, gam ken oveid es Hashem tamid. Let's say you're to marshal the body and to channel that body's service into godly service. Tamid lo hoya adam meis. A person will never die, right? Because the body is not simply interested in worldly things, and therefore doesn't need to be buried in this world as well. He says that's what happened before the Chet of Adam Rishon, not for now. So what did Pinchas do? Pinchas says, I believe in this ideal of Kiddush Hashem greater than I believe in bodily awareness. And I'm willing to even sacrifice myself and my body for the sake of this ideal. And therefore, what did he do? In that sacrifice of body, essentially what he's saying is, my body is not subject to the natural whims and wills of this world. So his body, so to speak, receded from being something which is bound by this worldly, which is why he actually avoided Missa, he avoided death, because his body was, so to speak, pulled out of the realm of material into the realm of spiritual and ideals. That's what happened. And that's why it is, later on, says the Rav Levi of Berdichev, why it is that Eliyahu did not need to eat for 40 days and 40 nights. Why it is that Pinchas at various times could become invisible, as you see in Sefer Yehoshua. Because his bodily awareness, the quotient that relates his body to his soul, was severely lopsided towards the soul, so much so that there was very little left of his body. And that's what's happening over here. That's why it's going up in a storm to heavens. Now, you wonder, okay, so why is it to be a storm? That's very dramatic. Why can't it just be, you know, there's a bus stop, the chariot comes, and that's it. Goodbye, Eliyahu. Why does it have to be this whole, you know, a grand storm? Says the Abarnel, a very powerful idea. V'ele nilkach ba'asa'or, it's a storm, la'ir, to teach us, gam kein shekol yomov hayu b'tzar v'omel machiv. It's a reflection of his life. It's a reflection, as sometimes I think to ourselves, think about our lives. How many storms? Is that an apt description of our own lives? It's so powerful. This is the life that Eliyahu led. It was a life of difficulty. It was a life of struggling. It was a life of not everything being added up. It was a life of trying to do for the community, and the community trying to kill him and ostracizing him. It wasn't a simple life. But nonetheless, it was a life worth it. And that's what's being said over here, says Abba Benel as well. There's also one other fascinating idea, and that is that if you count the miracles that Eliyahu had happened to him in his life, there were 8 explicit miracles that occurred to Eliyahu, and 3 of them were miracles which were public, and 5 of them were private miracles. Let's just do a quick recounting. Okay, so the first is that, remember when he was the private miracles are the following. When he went to the brook of Kishon, the Chris brook. And he was being sustained during the drought. The ravens were bringing him food. That's a silent miracle. Then there was this kad kemach and the tzapches shemen, which never really ended, by the widow that he stayed as well. That was we'll call it a private miracle. Then he brought back to life the child of that lady. And the ugas ritzofim etzapachas maim shenitan lo bamidbar, and the amount of food that lasted in the desert for that time when he was going to Sinai. Right, and finally, mashallah b'koach achila, that lasted for 40 days. All of these miracles were 5 quiet miracles that nobody knew about. But there were 3 more public miracles. What were they? The 3 public miracles that Eliyahu had was, number one is that he declared a drought and no rain came for 3 years. That was pretty public. Another one was, is that bringing down the fire from heaven on Har Carmel, and the third was that he was able to bring down the fire to destroy the servants of the son of the king of Achav, and when they came to summon him. So these are 3 public miracles. So says the Abarbanel, a fascinating insight, that when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is welcoming Eliyahu back to Shemayim, he did so commemorating the 3 miracles that Eliyahu had summoned for himself. And that's why, when it came to the drought, which he declared upon the world in honor of God, what happened was Eliyahu was able to cross the Jordan River, so to speak, have control over water. And he went up in the storm of fire with fiery horses to relate to the 2 episodes of fire that he brought down to this earth. It's almost as if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving a public demonstration of the ratification of Eliyahu's requests. Remember, Hashem did not ask those miracles. Eliyahu asked those miracles, but by doing so, he essentially was, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was ratifying Eliyahu's life as well. Notice something interesting, by the way, that Elisha tears Kriya. What's the halacha here? The Radak says an interesting thing. If a person is in the presence of what, there's Rebbe Muvak, Chas V'Shalom, their sage who taught him all their learning, and that person passes away, a person is meant to do Kriya V'Oysa Kera, and you're not able to repair that ever. Lefi Shneimar Lishnayim, as you see, based on this pasuk, that's a Gemara that Moed Katan learns this from as well. Fascinating halacha. Finally, this is the end of the section here. We're told Tezayin to Yudches. So they said, you know what? Maybe we should look around for Eliyahu. maybe the Spirit of God, you know, blew him away and he landed in a valley, he landed on a mountain. Perhaps we can do a search and rescue mission here. So Elisha says, don't go. And they just carry on pestering him. And he says, okay, you know what, go in your search party. And they searched for 3 days, they weren't able to find the body of Eliyahu. He says, I told you there'd be no point to this in this operation as well. So one of the questions you have to ask yourself is like, you know, didn't they see, like, you know, what's going on over here? They don't believe that Eliyahu went up to heaven. They're sending out a search and rescue pod. Rabbi says, Hinei choshvu, shegufoi gam kein nofal me'alav. It's not because they wanted to save him. Of course they knew he went up to heaven. But they thought in the same way that he was shedding symbolically his jacket, his robe, he shed his body as well because it wasn't the body that went up to heaven. So they said, out of respect for the body, let's go find the body so we can bury the body. They didn't realize that there could be a possibility of a body being nizdakech, that could be purified to the degree that it could ascend to heaven along with him. They didn't believe that was a possibility. So therefore they said, let's go search for it. And Elisha understood that Eliyahu had, whether it be shed or purified, his body to the degree that he was able to take his body with him. That's a remarkable perspective. That's what they misunderstood. Now, Babinel says, no, there was a greater and more egregious miscalculation that occurs. And this is a very, very, it comes back to what Babinel says before, a very powerful idea. But Amrami says, Shebnei Nevim Yodu L'Kichas Eliyahu. They knew that he'd been taken. Ki Lefi Shemei Roiv HaShefar Shoyad Nishpa Alov B'Chayov Hoyu Gam Heim Yodim Sh'Asilos B'Derech Nevuah. At the beginning, says the Abarbanel, when Eliyahu and Elisha appear at Beis El, and Yericho, and Ayarden, and Gilgal, and all these four places, and the Bnei Anavim come out, and they say, psst, Elisha, do you know that your master is going to be taken? It seems that they already know that Eliyahu is going to be taken. Why do they know that? Because they know it because Eliyahu was the conduit for their own prophecy. So as long as Eliyahu is here, therefore they understand the reality of the world, because he is the conduit through which they receive their nevuah. V'sha'achare shenignaz, but after Eliyahu disappears, nistalko mehem hanavua. They lost their channel. V'lochein choshu sheishlichosoi haruach be'echad harim oimin ha-geyos. So what does that mean? Why are they so ignorant of what the real reality is when they were so clearly aware, they were so conscious of the reality beforehand? And the answer is because what has happened in between is Eliyahu has died. Well, not died, but he's disappeared. And as Eliyahu disappears, that channel of connection to God has dried up to a certain degree. They don't have the same access as beforehand, and therefore they can make the silly mistake, it seems, to think that Eliyahu might just be, you know, lying around somewhere, and maybe he was, you know, he fell off the ruach, he fell off the chariot, or he wasn't really taken, you know, so they're so misled at this point in time because they no longer access. This is a demonstration of the fact of Eliyahu's absence, which now leads us to the next episode, the next step of the story, which is not the disappearance of Eliyahu, but the appearance of Elisha. Now in the next few prokim, which is going to be our next series, because we're closing this very short two-part series on the ascent of Eliyahu, we're now going to go into a new series, which is the ascent of Elisha, an extremely powerful Navi. And the ideas and the wonders that he is able to perform are going to be a natural follow-on for what we're seeing over here. This is the conclusion of this, really a very, very powerful idea that we see going on over here. And this is a Perek Beis of Melachim Beis. So we hold it here.